Welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Take control of your camera and develop the skills necessary to improve and master your photography. Join me, Dermot O'Donovan, John Myler and Darren J. Spoonley as they cut through the sometimes confusing jargon of photography to help you find your own style and decide what's best for you. A mix of educational, inspirational, honest and sometimes controversial content delivered in a unique, fun way from three of Ireland's talented photographers. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Irish Photography Podcast. I am your host, John Myler, again. And today I am joined, as always, by my two friends, Darren Spoonley and Dermot O'Donovan. How are you doing, guys?
I'm great. How are you, John?
Darren, first. Good. I'm good, Darren. Good. Dermot, you're tired. You've had a busy week. You've been doing something very exciting this week.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm just doing the start of the Santa Grotto this week. So I'm a bit cold after flying back from the North Pole. So my hands are torn out as we speak.
Well, it was a very special job. But you know what? Actually, that reminds me. Later on, we might have a little suggestion for your cold hands. We'll come to that later.
Sounds provocative.
But yeah. But lads, we said in an early episode on the podcast, we were talking about our photographing the Milky Way and so on in our first episode of our astrophotography podcast. And during that episode, I mentioned that when we go to talk about star trails, I'd love to have somebody come onto the show who knew a lot more about myself, how to take a star trail photograph and other areas of astrophotography in the night sky. And you two guys were quite keen on that as well. So I am delighted to bring in Anthony Lynch, who is joining us from Dublin today. And Anthony is very experienced with the night sky at this stage now. Anthony, can you hear us?
Me on the show.
You're very welcome. You're welcome to the show. Delighted to have you on.
Hi, Anthony. How's it going? How are you, boy?
All right, Anthony. How are we keeping, buddy? All is well, I hope.
All good. All right, as we say in Dublin.
Another dub. Oh, my God. Can we go to the next guest yet? No?
Not yet.
I feel at home in this episode, Anthony.
Good.
So, Anthony, I'm delighted to have you on because I've got a load of questions for you, and I know our listeners would love to hear some of the questions as well and the answers that you hopefully can give us. Yeah. But, you know, the first question I have for you is, when did you first get into photography in general now? When did you start? When did you pick up the camera and say, I like this?
That would have been about six and a half years ago. First camera was a Canon 1100D, but I didn't actually buy it for myself. I had no interest in photography. I bought it for the girlfriend for her birthday. And we were out one day in the park and she says, "Here, will you just take that camera for a minute while she's playing with the kids or whatever?" And I just started taking a couple of shots. Says, "That's pretty cool, actually, yeah. You know, you can freeze things and all." And that was my first experience with a camera. That's it, like, she never got it back, like, so that's how it started.
And you took on from there?
I took on from there.
Now, what'd you say, Canon what?
1100D. I had it for about a year, I'd say. It was an old camera now at this stage, but it done the job.
Yeah. You know, I bet brilliant. You it still does the job.
Playing a draw somewhere, I don't even know where the charger is after at this stage. But
it's a good old backup camera. And then from the astronomy end of things then, you went on from just taking photographs and getting used to getting into photography, I suppose. But then you got into astronomy. And what was it about astronomy that kind of made, what's the X factor, I suppose, or the wow factor for us? What gave you that?
And it grew out of it. And then again, I got back into it years later when I was maybe about 30 or something. But it's the fact that when you go out and look up on that sky, like, just from Dublin city, you can only see a few stars. If you bring somebody down to a dark sky on a clear night and they jump out of the car for the first time and they look up, I guarantee you the first thing they say is, "Wow, look at that." The second thing they usually say is, "It's bloody freezing, jump back in the car," you know. But it's just amazing. It's basically, like, it's the size of everything, like, it's the vastness of it, the scale, everything is so far away and we can see this, like, things like the Andromeda Galaxy, 2.5 million light years away, and I can see that with my eye. And I take a shot of that with the camera and I can pick up the detail, the dust lines and that, and it's amazing when you consider how far away it is. You're talking like one light year, right? The speed of light is the fastest thing we know, right? 300,000 kilometers per second. per second. It's insane. Now, the speed of light, say, is the distance light can travel in 1 year, obviously, right? Which is roughly, now it's a unit of time, not measurement, but if you put it into measurement, it's just under 9,500 billion kilometers for one light year. And this Andromeda galaxy is 2.5 million times that. If any of you want to do the maths, walk away, because I'm not doing it. It's a hell of a lot of zeros. But that, like, shows up on your camera in detail. It's just insane. Like, people have to see this, you know, to just love it. Like, how can you not fall in love with it?
Yeah, it puts things into perspective. That, and like you're saying about that wow factor, I remember I went up to the Dolmen there. It was actually the winter months, the Dolmen in County Clare in the Burren. And I brought my two kids with me at the time, and actually my mother was there as well, and they just looked up and it was like phenomenal. I mean, the blackness of the place was absolutely outstanding. I also went down to Ballon Skellig then with my father. Went down for a weekend trip just to, there was a Skellig party on down there, and I saw nothing. And I've heard so much about the dark skies down the Kerry. I saw absolutely squat. So, you know, I want to go back down there because I've heard so much about it, but you're right. The wow factor you get by looking up at the sky is just insane.
Yeah, but I did have the same trouble when I went to the Dark Sky Reserve in Kerry. I was completely clouded out as hell.
We'll have to go down there together, so some weekend.
There'll be double clouds if the two of you go together. I'll just go on my own.
That's always cloudy in Dublin.
My first experience, I suppose, with astronomy was when I was a kid, and God, I hope my father's not listening to this, because he got me a telescope at a certain time of the year, and I absolutely loved it, and went out, put it up onto the bonnet of the car. I remember looking up to the moon, and I saw the craters on the moon. I thought I was a great lad. Jesus, it was phenomenal to me. I went in to call him to come out, and it was on the ground. Yeah. I didn't get a telescope for years later. Then I got it. Is it a Next Star? Would that be right?
Yes, that's my exact scope. I have a 4-inch Next Star.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same. I don't know why it's, because it's an electronic one. The fob is broken on at the moment, so I can't move it around, basically, but it's pretty good. But I want to get that fixed.
A great telescope for the moon, for taking photographs of the moon. Brilliant. First ever shots I've took off the moon with that telescope. So really good for
excellent.
That.
John.
And that actually brings me on to the... Go, sorry, Dermot, go on.
How much is that telescope you broke?
Watch out, gas. I sense some gas coming here.
No, I'm not buying it. I'm just curious how much...
The one when I was a kid?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Are they expensive, Anthony, those telescopes?
My one was a present, but the 4-inch Next Hour, I think, is around 500 or 600 quid.
Wow, they're not cheap, so.
So, and that's... Yeah, no. That's a small one, though. Obviously, they go up to thousands, to tens of thousands if you want, you know.
Yeah.
I think the one I got at the time there, I think I got it about 6-7 years ago. Must have been about 800 or 900.
Right. An orange colour, is it?
Yeah, it is, actually. Orange and grey. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, that'll go to show you how much I use it. But, you know... Anthony, that's going to bring me on to the next question is, where was the first place that you took your night sky photograph that you can remember? A really, really good shot of the night sky.
I can tell you where my very first shot was taken, at the Sugarloaf car park, with that telescope we just spoke of, the 4-inch Next Star. And
pretty good.
It was when I realised, well, hang on, I've got this camera. Now, like I said, I was starting off in photography. I didn't know what the longest photo was. Like, I hadn't a clue, like, literally starting off. But I found out that this telescope, you could screw off the back of it and screw the camera on and make the telescope your lens. So I heard there was a couple of lads going down to the Sugarloaf from the Dublin Stargazers, I think. So I went down and they were helping me out and put it onto the Orion Nebula and took a shot. And I'm thinking, wow, is a nebula 1,400 light years away? And I have it on my camera in pink and purple. And I was delighted. Now, if I was to look back on that shot now, I'd say, holy you know, it's completely blurred and everything. Like, it is a good telescope, but it doesn't track properly for the astrophotography. You want, like, a different mount, an equatorial mount kind of. But, that was my first ever shot. And then, like I say, taking the shots of the moon, I can just take them from the garden. But I've taken so many of them over the years, I've gotten fairly decent at them now. I can pick out some nice detail on them. It's a perfect scope just for the moon and the sun. It's not great for stars, I have to say, because it's fixed at an f/13. Again, at the time, I didn't know what an aperture was, f/13. I knew nothing about it when I got this. But but it's still great. Nice, some of the shots you can get.
And you got plenty of shots of ET from your back garden as well.
I did. Do you know how that happens, right? My missus works in the place, girl, and every now and then you have to take turns bringing the dolls home and washing them and all, and she brought home a doll of ET.
Yeah.
And I says, can I have him for a photograph? I said, and I sat him on the fence outside. There was an eclipse going on, and I had his hand up, so it looked like he was touching the eclipse. And I kept that doll. Do you know what? This just makes me think I have a habit of taking things off the missus and not giving them back.
Camera, doll. Yeah, there's a pattern there, right, Anthony?
Keep going.
I've seen a few of your Star Trail photographs from Glendon Lock, and that's one particular area that I personally would like to go and shoot my first Star Trail. But you seem to be in there. You've been there a good bit now, haven't you?
Yeah, see, Glendon Lock is fairly easy to get to. Most people know where it is. But it's also like it's a landmark, the Round Tower. You know, people know. People would be scared going there at night because it is partly going into a cemetery and the old ruins and all. But when I started off, first time I went there, it was just me on my own. You know, I've kind of gotten used to going out in the dark. It doesn't bother me. North Star just happens to be behind the tower from where we stand. So it's perfect to get that circular Star Trail rather than just lines going across. It's a great spot to bring people.
Oh, very good.
Level ground. You can stand around, have a chat while they're doing your shots.
All right. I've got a question for you, right? So talk me through this, okay? I'm somebody who's got my first camera and Dermot gave me a lens and he said it's an F4 lens and I don't know what F4 means, but I wanted to shoot a Star Trail. So if you were to bring me out, talk me through it. Everything from what do I look for what part of the sky do I look for? What might I need to help me take that shot? And maybe when we want chat about post-processing, what you might use. So I've rocked up to the car park. I met you. How's it going?
On, John. Yeah. Right. First thing, turn off that torch.
Perfect.
The rest of the photographers will kill you. Just don't have lights on. Okay. Right, first thing you're going to need, a good tripod. I can't stress this enough, how good it is to have a decent heavy tripod, especially if you're doing a Star Trail. That's going to take a good long bit of time. If the wind blows that at all, that's your Star Trail ruined. Okay. Nice heavy tripod, level ground, with a little spirit level built in, like my one, get a level. Get your ball head set up, your camera. Now, an F4 lens, not ideal for night sky, 2.8 is, but for Star Trails, it doesn't matter. Because you're doing loads and stacking them, it doesn't matter. What we're going to do, we're going to look for the North Star. The North Star is the only star in the sky that doesn't move. It slightly wobbles, but the rest of the stars revolve around that in a circle. So, straight at the North Star, obviously we're going to get the full circle of stars. Now, what we're going to do, we have to find the North Star first.
Darren can't find it, it's okay.
Yes, that is true, actually. I've really struggled. I can do it now, right, yeah, I learned, but I remember. John, you mentioned about the telescope falling on the ground. My buddy's telescope was thrown in the bin.
So how do we find this North Star?
Who would know the Big Dipper constellation? Major, the Great Bear. It's like a big pot shape in the sky. Take the first two parts of that constellation and you follow them in a straight line, straight up, about five times the distance between them two stars. It takes you straight to the North Star. It sounds more complicated than it is if I showed you. Basically, first two stars, you take the distance between them, measure it with your finger, and follow it straight up five times. That's all.
Excellent.
And that's the North Star right there.
Did you get that, Darren?
I sure did, yeah. I've taken notes.
I can see it right now.
Right. Now, we have got the focus your camera. The hardest thing you will do in astrophotography, apart from the post-processing, is getting your camera to focus. Once you have that done, you're set up for the night. I'll just tell you, my very first time I went out to take a night sky photograph, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. I could not get the camera to focus. It's gone in and out, zooming in and out, saying, what is going on here? I couldn't get a shot. It's because it's on the autofocus, which is not going to work in the dark. So, camera on manual settings. Lens, switch to manual. As wide as the camera will go, and you want to put it on live view. You want to zoom in times 10 or whatever to find one star. Or you usually find the brightest star in the sky. If Jupiter or Venus is around, use them because you can barely see them even on live view. And you want to tweak your focus till you get that star till a tiny little pinprick, the smallest that it will actually go, and that's usually a focus or pretty close. You might have to tweak it side to side, a couple of tester shots. Anyway, once you have that done, you know where your North Star is. You set up for the tower to have it there. obviously make sure that other photographers are not going to walk in front of your camera, so you kind of all set up side by side, so you know, because if they walk in front of your camera, it's ruined. Anyway, once you have that done, release is best. I prefer the ones that just plug in with the cable rather than these remote control ones. A lot of them, they don't work if you're behind the camera, so you have to keep reaching over and pressing it. And the one that you just plug in, I set it for 30-second shots, leave that running for 3 hours, and just walk away. I'd have a spare camera and keep on going. Now, you don't have to do 30-second shots. You can do like single 5-minute shots and stack them. But the reason I like to do 30-second shots is because the stars are not blurred in a single shot. And say a meteor or something flew over in the shot, you would catch that one particular shot. Rather than having your 5-minute shot, you still get the meteor, but all blurry stars. Which actually did happen one night in Glendalough. And appeared to touch the top of the tower and won the shot, which is great.
No way.
Anyway, once you have all them, say an hour, 2-3 hours, depending on how crazy and how cold you are and you want to stay out, post-processing, you can get a free program called Star Stacks, free to download, and it is literally the easiest program to use. Load all your files into it and you press stack, and that's it, and that stacks them all for you, makes a perfect star trail. Cool. And then if you want to move it over to Photoshop, darken it, brighten it, whatever you want. And that's basically it. There's your star trail.
Anthony, excellent.
So, why, how would you spell star stacks? Is that with an X or a KS at the end?
Yes. It is with an X, I should have said that. Sorry.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. I didn't know, I was just guessing.
It's all one word with an X at the end.
Cool. Anthony, I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but if, you know, I see some lovely star trail photographs and they'll have a bit of foreground interest, and the foreground is lovely lit up. It's a lovely exposure. Would you normally do expose one shot for the foreground and then go and do your star trail there?
There's a couple of ways to do this. Some people will light the foreground with a torch and focus on that, you know, a quick 30-second shot or whatever. A lot of the time, it wouldn't look like natural light just because of the torch moving around. So what you want to do, a really long exposure and keep the ISO fairly low so there's no noise in it. But like, I've often left it running for 10 minutes. Just taking a single shot, say like Meliphant Abbey, you have a great one from down there. I left it running for 10 minutes just to get that, and then focus back on the sky and take the rest of the shots, and you can just stack them all, blend them all back in later in post processing.
Ah, okay, that makes sense to me. That sounds quite good. That's something I have to get to do. And Darren, you done a star trail in a challenge, didn't you?
I did, yeah. You challenged me to try and do a star trail,
I didn't have.
Down the gap of Dunloe, but I didn't have 3 hours, unfortunately. So I did what I wanted to try and get done, which was, you know, tick the box for getting the challenge done. But it was fun, actually. Yeah, but as Anthony had said, like, you know, you get out and you go, oh yeah, look at this, and then immediately followed with, oh Jesus, it's freezing.
Yeah, I'm on a mission this year now to get a good star trail photograph this winter. I always kind of, personally, what I associate the summer with the Milky Way and the winter months with star trails. That's just me. I need to make a better effort to get out. But guys, we're going to take a quick break now and be back in a second. And we're just going to hear from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back, guys. Anthony, Dermot and Darren, we're all still here. We're having a wonderful discussion here with Anthony regarding astrophotography, and we've just spoken about star trail photographs, particularly up in the Glendalough, which is great. But Anthony, I believe I saw a beautiful photograph recently of a star trail over the Botanic Gardens in Dublin.
The Irish Astronomical Society are having The Images of Starlight. It's an exhibition of 60 of the best night sky shots from around the country as part of Science Week, it started off. And I had 5 shots in that myself, a few friends had shots in it. But as part of the Science Week events, the Botanic Gardens agreed to let them host a telescope night in the gardens by the big glass house, the Palm House as it's called. Now, the Botanic Gardens never really opens at night. So of course, when I heard this, I contacted John, who was running this, John, saying I would really love to get a star trail shot from there. It's never been done. Like, I know I could be the first person to get the shot. John said, sure, come on up. Of course, we got there, cloudy. An hour went by, cloudy. Another hour goes by and it's starting to clear, and I said, you know, we'll set up the camera. Now there's a friend of mine there as well, set up cameras, and we both end up getting the same shot. Left it running for an hour. Now much shorter exposure, it's only about 10 to 15 seconds because of all the light pollution, how the shot would come out. But in the end, I'd say about an hour and 20 minutes when we stacked them all and took the clouds and all out, it didn't turn out too bad.
Pretty good.
And then I was on Facebook there a couple of days ago, and someone tagged me in a post saying the Botanic Gardens just shared your shot, like, and so
brilliant. Great,
yeah.
Oh.
So,
yeah. It's a fantastic photograph, and is it okay to for you to share it on the podcast page, our own podcast page on Facebook? I'm sure our listeners would love to see it.
Of course, yeah.
It's a cracking photograph. And what did you say is going on again? The event is the 60 top photographs. Is that correct?
The best night sky photographs from photographers around the country. You've got people that are taking them with just a camera, and then you've got the telescope shots, you've got moon shots, you've got there might be a couple of kid shots, like I've seen a shot there from about 9, you know, and you could make
fantastic.
Out the stars in it. There, she had a photograph of a star trail, and when I seen it, I kind of smiled a bit because she came on a class with me and I taught her how to get that star trail. And now she has this image in this thing. Like, so, yeah, it's good to see, you know.
So that was a nice proud moment for you.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And I suppose moving on from the star trail, something that I stand corrected now, lads, but something that we haven't done is getting a photograph of the Northern Lights. Yeah, correct? Would I be right in saying that? At least not from abroad.
I haven't anyway. It's on my list to do. As you know, I'm down south in Cork. You keep reminding me I'm in Cork all the time. And they're the Northern Lights. So, you know, it'd be hard for me to do it. But I will get to these places, you know, Iceland and Norway, which is, you'll get it all the time. But it's definitely on my list. Dad, what about you?
It's impressive when I look at them, yeah, but it's not one that would be on my bucket list that I would have to do. I have far things that I would like to do before I get to Northern Lights. But hey, look, if it popped up in front of me someday and wherever I am, then yeah, it's a bonus, you know. But I much prefer Milky Way shots, to be totally honest with you. The Northern Lights just don't do it for me. But yeah, they are nice, but...
I do love my Milky Way shots, but we're over in southern Iceland on this day last year, and I got the Milky Way and the Northern Lights in the same shot. You can't top that, you know. No, it is the winter Milky Way, so it's not as good as the summer Milky Way, of course, but it's still nice. But yeah, this day last year we were there. 7 nights we spent under the Northern Lights. Out of 7 nights, we got 5 clear nights. It was insane. I was nearly crying. It was so beautiful. I swear to God, you had to see this. Like, you know, we're all jumping up high fives and all. 2 cameras, because there was just so much to photograph. I had to leave one running on time lapse, and I think over the course of 5 days I had close to 9,000 shots just of the Northern Lights, which I put all together into time lapse. But I went down for about 10 minutes, like I had to speed it up, you know, because there were so many. But yeah, it's an unbelievable thing to see. But my very first one I got from the Hill of Tara, County Meads. Now people think there's a Tara, like it's only Mead, but the thing is, the charts, of course, you can check like Space Weather Live, and they'll tell you if you think there's an aurora coming in. Actually, speaking of which, there could be one this weekend.
Excellent.
I should say that. It is possible. Yeah, we have a new sunspot rotating, or an old one coming back around again. Anyway, we had gone up to the Hill of Tara, and we stopped off at St. Margaret's at the back of the airport along the way. There's a little bit of a dark sky. I know it's the back of the airport, but it's facing the opposite way. I was with a friend of mine, and we said, we'll do a test of shot. And I got this little hint of grain, I mean, like a couple of inches long. It was tiny, but it was grain. I'm jumping up and down, yeah, first Northern Lights, great. And then we were watching the charts again. He says, yeah, it might keep going. Come on, we head out to Tara. So it was my first time out to Tara at night as well. So we went up there, and because it's on a hill and you've got 360 right the way around, you can see all around. Now, you do have the light pollution from Drogheda and Skreen and the other towns around, but the aurora did kick off. We got little bands going up. Now, a lot of people, when they go out to see it, it's not green. They think they're looking at clouds, you know, because sometimes it's white, but it's the camera, you know, the sensors in the camera that picks up the colour, but we're getting greens and reds, and it's incredible to see if you've never seen it.
Excellent. I only kind of got a rare glimpse of it. I was telling you before we came onto the podcast, down in Loophead, and it was a friend of mine who actually spotted it because he knew they were out. I could barely see it, and the camera picked up so much more than me. But we said earlier on at the start of the show about looking up at the night sky and seeing the stars and getting that whole wow feeling. I mean, I am. I know I have a different bucket list to Dermot, but the Northern Lights must be way up there in my bucket list. And I mean, the day I go there and I see them pop up over my head, it'll be amazing. But actually reminds me, it also reminds me, there was a friend of mine who went over to Iceland to shoot the Northern Lights as well. And when he came back, I said to him, I said, what was the experience like? You know, what was it like? And he actually said to me, I can't really remember. And the reason he said this was because they came out so quickly. He said, you don't know where they're going to appear, whether they're going to be in front of you or behind you. And he was so focused on getting his photograph and getting the settings, getting everything right. He took his image and they disappeared. So he didn't actually have time to take in the whole wow factor of seeing them. He was so focused on getting the photograph. They got a classic photograph.
So I can relate to that. For the first couple of nights I was doing that, I was just panicking, had to get this shot. But about the third or fourth night, I had set the camera up and it was about minus 15 degrees. The ground is covered in snow, but it wasn't really cold. So I actually scrunched up loads of snow to make like a pillow out of it. And I had the camera set up running time lapse. And I just lay back and just looked up. You know, sometimes you just have to put the camera down and just, you have to experience this. You know, it's just classic.
That's fantastic. Myself and Dermot done that in the previous podcast. We spoke about the Milky Way. We lay down like two close friends up behind O'Brien's Tower on the Cliffs of Moher at about 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. It was a lovely experience, Dermot. So what's next on Anthony's bucket list for places to go to photograph just the night sky?
It depends on what I'm photographing. Tenerife, I would love to go back to Tenerife again to photograph the night sky, the Milky Way in particular, because it's just insane over there. In Ireland, we're at about 53 degrees latitude. In Tenerife, you're at 28. So we went there in June of this year, and we could see the Milky Way like from about 10 o'clock at night until about 7 o'clock next morning. The whole band, the Milky Way, was there. In Ireland, in June, you can't even see the stars. It's just so bright. It doesn't get dark in June at all. So you don't do astronomy in June. But it's insane over there. But then for the Northern Lights, I'd love to try Norway next year. Because friends of mine have just come back there. It does look...
There is certainly a lot more people going to Norway now, or for sure. And for our listeners, is there any upcoming, is it celestial events? Am I pronouncing that word right?
That's it, celestial events. Once it's happening in the sky, it's celestial.
So is there anything coming up that we could look out for? And are you taking into consideration this podcast is going out mid-December, so what have you got in the skies over Christmas, say?
Well, let me say mid-December. The 16th of December, any good to you?
I'm shooting a wedding that day, so that's not good for me.
Santa getting married again, is he?
Yeah.
Right. Come 46p, we're tanning. And this is, let me try and remember this, it is the 10th closest comet since 1950, but the 20th closest comet since the 9th century. It's going to be within 11,500 kilometers on the 16th of December. It's going to be at its closest point. Now, they're only doing an estimate saying the magnitude, which is basically the brightness, how bright it's going to be. They say it could reach +3. Now, there's no definite, but in order of magnitude, for anyone who doesn't know, the human eye can see about 4 or 5. From a really dark sky, you might see 5 to 6. It'd have to be really dark. So +3 is barely visible to the naked eye, but to a camera, it's going to be insane. Like, you'd be able to pick it up. It's a lovely green colour because of all the gases, the emissions and stuff. The tail isn't brilliant on it, but it could get better as it goes towards the sun. But it has a big coma, which is a big glow all the way around it. Could be as big as a moon, they were
brilliant.
Saying. So to the eye now, it'll just look like a star, you know, but it's the camera, those long exposures.
But once you know where to look in the sky, where to find it in the sky.
Yeah.
Am I putting you on the spot to ask you what direction you'd look in? Or did you?
No, let me think. Everything in the sky rises straight out my window here. So looking east, which is grand, which is where Orion rises. If you know the constellation Orion, most people do, and you've got the Hades star cluster, which is part of Taurus, that's right above Orion, and the comet is bang between the both of them, so it's so easy to find. I haven't had a chance to get out and photograph it yet myself, but I will. The only problem is on the 16th now, there's a fairly big moon out as well that night, but sure, we'll still give it a go. It will be around for the next few weeks, months even. As after it comes to us, it's going to make its closest approach to the sun at 187 million kilometers. But usually when they get to the sun, that's when they get brighter, because like big dirty snowballs, you know, it's going towards the sun, they start to melt. That's what gives them the big tails and everything and so on. we have got, actually before that I should have said around about the 14th, the day before, is the Geminids Meteor Shower.
Oh, that's correct.
Which, yeah. The Geminids Meteor Shower, there's two major meteor showers during the year. Now, there's loads of showers, but the two biggest ones are the Perseids in August and the Geminids just before Christmas. And they can both produce anything from 60 to 120 meteors per hour.
Wow.
Now, if you see a meteor for the first time, now a lot of people have seen meteors, but if you photograph a meteor for the first time, you're catching that going at like 95,000 kilometers an hour flying through space as a grain of dust that just burns up as soon as it hits the atmosphere, and you catch that on camera, you want to see the smile on people's faces. They'll be jumping up and down, look like that, like this is insane. Like, it's all different colors, like green, yellow, red, it's going all the way down. But that, it's usually between the 12th and the 14th. This year it is on a Friday night, so it's going to be the weekend, and it's the night of the 14th into the morning of the 15th.
Excellent.
And the moon goes down that night, I'd say about 20 past 11, so, which is good, because meteor showers are best seen after midnight anyway.
Perfect.
So that's a good thing to get out and photograph.
There's something else that goes across the sky on a regular basis at the moment with a couple of people inside.
E.T.
The International Space Station is flying back over our skies for the next couple of weeks. Visible. I was talking about the magnitude of stars being 2 and 3. The smaller the number, the better it is. So, like, it goes into minus numbers for the space station. It can get up to -3.5, which is seriously bright. It's like brighter than Mars and Venus out there, which are the brightest stars out there at the minute. Flies across the sky for anything from 2 minutes up to 6 minutes in the sky. You can get an app on your phone, tells you when it's going over, or check my page, I'd post it up to tell people, and sure, give them a wave as they're going over, the astronauts, Americans and Russians on board.
I think it's a really cool thing to see. You know, I always try and tell the kids to go and look at it, because it's quite cool, very, very cool.
It's great. Like, when you think, like, the space station is about the size of Crow Park.
Wow.
Like, and that's flying through space 250 miles up, and it's gone about 17,500 miles per hour, or 28,000 kilometers per hour, and that's flying through. So, like, we see it here, and 5 minutes later, it's over France. You know, they get like 16.5 sunrises and sunsets every day. Imagine being a photographer who likes sunrises and sunsets and getting 16.5 of them every day, just going round and
like
round.
Like your man, Chris Hadfield. I remember watching him actually. Yeah, it was Chris amazing Hadfield. Because he'd post pictures, and he was in the space station taking these photographs, and he'd post ones of Ireland, and I was like, oh yeah. And I was wondering why he kept posting pictures of Ireland, because his daughter was in college in Dublin.
That's right, she went to Trinity. I met her, I did. Actually, I met both of them. I've met Chris a couple of times while he was here as well. And a few things from me. I used to do drawings and paintings and all. I did a sketch of him, and I gave him a copy, and he signed one for me. I have it hanging in the house and all. Nice, yeah.
I think Dermot has a question he wants to ask you there.
Yeah, Anthony. You're talking about the tripods there a while ago, and you're saying a good heavy tripod. Now, a lot of people, like myself included, we would have maybe carbon fiber tripods. Would they be useless in a situation for your photographing a night star? Because they are a lighter tripod, but I know they're strong. But
they are. Yeah. When I went to buy my tripod, they tried to send me the carbon fiber one. Now, it was more or less the same price. Like, I just wanted the heavy one. But a lot of my friends that go, they do have the carbon fiber ones, as long as they're not the really cheap, flimsy ones that are going to blow over. Personally, I've got a Manfrotto, I think it's called a 550 or something. Nice ball head on it, fairly heavy. You can get them with a hook, though. If the tripod is too low, you can just get the bag and hang it on the hook to keep it steady. A good tripod, you definitely need a good tripod.
I have a good tripod. It's just, I was just curious, because I've always said it, like, I know carbon fiber is lighter, but it's not going to be as heavy and as strong as an aluminium tripod. So I'm just curious about it for the night stars. Like, I've never had a problem with shooting anything with it, like, you know, but I was just curious.
I'm sure it'd be fine. Yeah.
And Anthony, you you kind of touched on it earlier about saying you announced it on your page. You run the Republic of Astronomy. Is that correct? Is that your Facebook page? Tell us a bit about that, when you set that up.
Okay, that started, again, around about the time I got the camera and the telescope. I used to be going online looking for stuff that was happening in the sky. And the only Irish pages that were out there would tell you about stuff the day after they had happened. They'd tell you, oh, the Geminids meteor shower happened last night. I'm saying, that's not good to me. So no matter where I went, this is where I got it. So I started going online, doing a bit of research, finding out all this stuff, and I was sharing it on my own page. And then a friend of mine says, why don't we just set up a page and we'll tell people about this? And before we knew that, that took off. I haven't checked it in a while, but there's like about 17,000-18,000 people on that, the followers now, just to find out what's happening in Night Sky. But we'll also like share that pictures, of course. You know, if you take a picture and people to see it, get it out there, so send it into us, Republic of Astronomy on Facebook there. And again, things like the space station going over tonight, that'll be up there now. If you want to know what time it's going over at tomorrow, just check the page there, it'll be there. So
your page has really took off. I know I follow it quite regularly and I find it very interesting. I've actually contacted you a few times about a couple of things that I've seen. I think you're probably going, yeah, who's that? He's at Egypt down the south.
Yeah, it's your band now already.
Darren, I'll bring you in there. I think you might have a question or two.
Yeah, I do actually. And it's fascinating listening to Anthony talking, because it's something that I've always loved, is the night sky. And I've taken a lot of photos of the night sky over the years, and I've taken a couple with you, John, as well. But one thing I've noticed, and I think I suppose I want Anthony's thoughts on it, is from a processing point of view of the images. So I can see, you know, people going out and they take the photos with the camera and they use the settings that you mentioned, but you bring it home and it doesn't look like the finished image. How would you typically process an astro shot?
Well, there's plenty of different ways to do this. One is I send them to a friend sometimes, because...
Oh, my God. He's one of them.
Well, I'll tell you, it depends on how big your files are, right? If you've been shooting galaxies for hours and hours and hours, I only have a laptop at home, and it just cannot handle the pressure of trying to stack all this software. So sometimes I'll get a friend to do it a bit before me. Other times, so many programs. You can have Deep Sky Stacker, where it's specially made for night sky stuff. It will stack all the images, then you can bring them over to Photoshop or Lightroom and try and pull the details back out of them. One with TIFF files over there, and then transferring it back over. Stack them directly in Photoshop, which is what I would do mostly. It's just because it's handiest for me. I have a friend who's, like I say, he's a lot better than me if I can't get the best, but I'll ask him to have a look. But like, you basically just need a really good computer, and it's learning how to use the software. There's another one out there, PixInsight. It's a few quid to buy this one, a few hundred quid, I think. But somebody gave me a copy of it, which is great.
Yeah, brilliant.
Again, once you can stack all the software or the photographs, but like, it's not about the actual photographs. You've got to take like your dark frames, your light frames, your bias frames, and these all have to be blended in as well. That kind of cancels out all your noise, brings out more detail, the nebulosity, gases, colors, everything. There's a hell of a lot of work goes into it. You could spend one night taking your shots, but another 2 days post-processing just to get it all to come together. Like, there's a lot of work.
And that's where Dad will switch off.
We'll just get turned off straight away. No, can't do that.
And actually, you touched it there, which is the second part I want to ask you about. So you were saying about the settings, you know, and the length of time from the exposure. But one thing, and we know from previous episodes, a favourite part that Dad loves to see in photographs is noise. So how do you, number one, limit the noise, but number two, from an ISO point of view, when you're taking your night shots, what would you recommend to people?
Okay, obviously it depends on what camera and lens. Your full frame camera lens 2.8, which means you can have the ISO lower down. Typically for an average shot with a 2.8 wide angle lens, I would do the ISO at about 1,000 for 30 seconds to get me a nice star shot, not too much noise. If you've gone to an F4 lens, you're probably going to have to go up to 1600 ISO, maybe 2000, then you start seeing the noise. But if you can take loads of them shots and stack them, that will cancel out the noise. The only problem is if you stack them, you're stacking one star on top of another while they're moving, so they're going to be blurred. This is where we use a thing called a star tracker.
Yeah.
It's like a little mount, goes on top of your tripod. It's got gears in it that rotate once every 24 hours, just like the stars. So okay, you have to, again, you have to find your North Star, and there's a little an eyepiece that you look through with a laser on, line it up with the North Star, switch it on, and that will track away for you. So you can take a 5-minute exposure and your stars will not be blurred at all.
Brilliant.
And again, there'll be no noise with a 5-minute exposure. But you can also put a big lens, say like a 70 to 200 lens on, and take a shot of the Andromeda Galaxy. Now, I've done that a lot at the Orion Nebula, but again, you just start shooting 2-minute shots for about an hour or two and stack all them, but like, the detail you can get is unreal considering how far it is away. Like,
Yeah, for sure. And I'd say it is amazing to see the actual image itself form when you start putting all the images together as well, like into the final image, yeah? Yeah.
Great to see the final results, you know. If you've been out all night freezing your ass off literally to get the shot in the snow sometimes, and then when it all just comes together, you just yes, that was worth it. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Yeah, and then you see the clouds.
Yes.
Anthony, talking about lenses and apertures and everything, like myself now, my favourite go-to lens for Astro is my 20mm 1.4. Mm-hmm. What would be your favourite go-to lens for astrophotography?
I'll tell you just the lenses that I used myself. I had the Samyang 14mm 2.8 just because it's so wide. When I was doing the star trails and all, you can get so much in. But it does make the Milky Way really, really skinny because it's so wide, obviously. The Canon 16-35 2.8, that's the one I used a lot. I don't have it anymore, unfortunately. It's a new one, well, fairly new one. It's the Sigma 14-24. I believe it's a 2.8. I'm not sure if it's out already or it's coming out, but this is the one I'm thinking of looking at next anyway.
Very good. That's very interesting. I suppose just going back to what Darren was saying there about post-processing, I suppose the a lot of work goes in when you get home, a hell of a lot of work. So for somebody to come home and think they're going to edit an image and have it out there in a half an hour, it's not
things like star trails, you know, they're really fast, and star sex and all, you know, they're no problem, but it's the likes of the deep sky stuff, and that takes time, you know.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, I have one question for you, and I hope you don't mind me asking you this question, but I know it's going to be, again, of interest to a lot of our listeners, and I know you were away, and I'm sure you don't mind me saying this, you were away at one stage with a couple of mates, and some gear went astray.
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah. We went over to Tenerife just to photograph the night sky. That was the whole reason we went there. Tenerife, perfect island for it. There's like, they've got a telescope right up on the top of the mountain there in the national park, and it would be cloudy during the day, and we would drive up here at night time. There's a mountain about 3,000 meters. You're allowed up about 2,500. You have to have a permit beyond that because of the altitude and stuff. And cars up. But you go to about 1,500 meters, and you're just, oh man, it's cloudy here. You know, we can't see a thing. And the next thing, you just keep driving and say, it's misty. It's not mist. You're driving through the clouds, and you come out on the far side. It's clear overhead, and the clouds are beneath your feet. And there's the Milky Way, and you drive up in your park. And the landscape, like, there's a part that's like a lunar landscape, another part with flowers. It's just insane for photographing the Milky Way. Anyway, we had gone out the first night, I'm rambling on there a bit, and we had taken all these amazing shots, and we're coming home about 6-7 the next morning, stopping off, getting cloud inversions on the way back. Anyway, got back to the house, we says we'll get a few hours sleep. I just happened to have my laptop with me. I brought it just because when I went over to Iceland, I didn't have enough cards, and I had to start deleting shots. So this time I brought the laptop. I saved all my shots onto my laptop, due to lads didn't. Next morning, we went up to the Damaska Valley. It's this beautiful country with these winding roads going all down these mountains, and we parked the car in this lay-by. Now there's loads of cars there, and we jumped out, we walked 20-30 feet, that's all, for about 5 minutes, and when we came back, the gear was gone out of hand. The van had been locked, and they somehow got into the van, and they grabbed the gear, and they ran. Well, to say, we were devastated.
Oh my God.
We had got to shoot one night, that was it, and we were here for another 4 or 5 days, and all our gear was gone, and the police didn't want to know anything over there, they don't care. For the car wouldn't cover us, nothing, so we had to stay there for the next few days. Obviously we were all very disappointed. I almost wanted to give up on photography. I said, I'll never go there again, the whole lot. Very down at the time, you know, I just lost.
I can imagine.
Two cameras, 5 lenses. Every filter, bits and pieces, you know, it came to thousands and thousands anyway. My friends as well, they just, like, their stuff was gone as well, so we're all disappointed. And another mate went and set up one of these GoFundMe pages for us, and people started putting their money in. This money's actually going up, maybe we could, like, get a camera or lens or something each. And turned out it got up to about 5,200, I think. In about a week or two. I'm like, just, man, no, people are so good, you know, it's great. But then I also found out that somebody wanted to remain anonymous paid for my new camera, so that we could still keep the $5,000 there and we could put it all together so the three of us could get a new camera and new lens. But they wanted they wanted to remain anonymous. So anyway, it's like I'd love to be able to thank the person. I'll say thank you now if they're listening. Thanks to that must have been 50, 60 people that threw the money in to help, maybe more, and from all around the country, from different countries and all. Like, it was just an unbelievable gesture from everyone.
That's very good. People are kind. There is kindness still in the world.
I learned as soon as I got a new camera, I didn't actually take the camera out of the box for about 3 or 4 weeks. I got the new camera and I had it there. It's a great of all new gear. But, you know, I don't know, I was just kind of lost. I couldn't get back out into it, you know. Once I did now, it was great. But yes. I ended up shopping around for camera insurance and I found this company and it turned out it wasn't nearly as expensive as I thought it was going to be. So straight away, cameras insured, everything. So I'm going back to Tenerife to finish what I started next year.
Good for you.
All the gears insured this time.
Yeah, brilliant, perfect, very good. And that's you know, I know it's a sad story, but you know, there's a happy ending to such a sad story. But we know, guys, we're very close to the end of our podcast, but I'm not going to let you go, Anthony, until we talk about Shadow, because recently on Facebook, you blew me away, I have to say. Now, I saw your live video up in, is it Ballinastow, am I saying
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Ballinastow, yeah. In County
Ballinastow.
Yeah.
I saw your video come up actually live. I normally see these live videos the next day, but I actually saw it live in the day and I was going, oh my God, the snow's falling up there. What a place to be. And then in their live video, I could see the dog, I think it was your friend's dog, was it? It was with you coming up in the background. And then an hour or two later, you posted this amazing video and I'll let you tell our listeners.
My friend loves the weather and he was watching the charts and seeing a bit of pink in the charts which show snow, so he rings me. Now it was lashing rain and tumbling and the whole lot, and he says, do you fancy going up to Wicklow, it's a bit of snow. I says, no, you must be choking, it's lashing. He says, I'm telling you, man, listen to me. So I says, right, fair enough. So I went to collect him, I had the van. He says, can we throw the dog in? I says, sure, you know, it's a well-trained dog, bring him in. And we got there and it's lashing all the way up and going up to the Sally Gap, and we turned the corner and it started to get sleet. He says, man, there could be something here. By the time we parked up, we had literally just parked up and it started snowing. So like, talk about time. And so we're all happy. I did a quick little 5 second video pointing at the first bit of snow on the ground, and within 10 minutes Mirror had picked it up and I had 50,000 views of just one little tiny bit of snow on the ground. Anyway, we went on with the dog. Like I said, I was doing the live video because I knew sometimes try to say the shots are fake, you know, because he had a shot. Because this dog, right, is an Alaskan Malamute, but he looks like a wolf. To balance out to where the steps were, and there's a clearing in the steps, and only 4 steps had snow on them where the clearing was, and the snow had just gone through, like it was just starting. So we got the dog to sit down. It's a well trained dog. My friend got him to. And we took some snaps and a bit of video and all, and then we says, do you know what, if we could get that dog to howl, that would be just epic. Now I know his dog can howl, you see, because I've heard him before, but the only way to make him howl, there's a video on YouTube of another dog howling, and when he hears him howling, he starts to howl. So the both of us had the phone down and we're trying to get the video up, no signal. I said run down the end of the forest, I'm gonna set the camera up for a video. I says, download that video, you know. So he runs all the way back down with the dog chasing him. It's the video from YouTube, comes running back up. I got it. I says, right, I'm gonna this up the camera. I says, I'm gonna do a little video, I'll get shot later. And he's hiding behind a tree playing that video. He gets the dog to stand to stand on a rock, and like the dog just stays there, like he's so well trained. My dog is thick compared to this dog, you know? he'd do nothing, he's tall, but this one, he just stands there and he heard the video and he just started howling. I said, oh man, this video is gonna be insane, like. And that's how it worked out. And then day I get an email and followed by a phone call from a guy in New York saying, happy Thanksgiving, sir. We'd love to take your video and all. And that was it. It was on the news that night down in America and NBC and AccuWeather and the whole lot. They all shared it. Last time I checked, it was up to 750,000 views or something.
Wow.
But there you go, just a picture of a dog.
I'm not surprised though, but it was absolutely, it was one of the best videos I've seen in a long time, I have to say. And I think the night that I messaged you very quickly, it's like, Please tell me you got a photograph
you
as well.
You did, you did.
Yeah.
And I did take photographs. Now, the video went up first, and I put the photo up later, and people who hadn't seen the video kept on saying, man, somebody photoshopped a wolf into the Ballinasloe those steps. It looks stupid. I just go on straight away, look at the video, and then they'd be straight back on, sorry, man, I'm sorry, that is so cool. You know?
Brilliant, it's great, it's absolutely funny. I was actually going to ask you for a funny story, but you know what? With your mate running down the hill with the phone to download the video. That's funny enough for me. Guys, we're going to take one more break from our sponsors and I'll be back then to talk about our VSB.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back, and we're having an absolutely fantastic discussion here with our guest Anthony Lynch on the episode tonight. But before we wrap this up, guys, I just want to talk about a VSP, which is our very solid products. And Anthony, I'm going to throw this over to you. Give us a VSP, something that's going to be appropriate with our discussion tonight when it regards astrophotography.
Okay, your very special product is something so simple, costs you €2, hand warmers. Now you might think, now I'm not talking about to keep your hands warm. If you're out doing long exposures, especially on a winter's night, if there's no wind, your lens fogs up, it gets covered in dew. So what you do, you get an elastic band, two hand warmers, like I said, €2, you just shake them about, they heat up, and you wrap them around your lens hood with an elastic band. It only needs to heat your camera by 1 degree to stop dew from forming. Because if you've been shooting trails on Milky Way for hours and hours, and you go back later and find out your lens has dewed up and you've lost everything, you will not be happy. So, hand warmers, €2, best thing you'll ever buy.
That's excellent. Brilliant. I actually have hand warmers because when I'd go scuba diving in December and January, like it's quite cold, you know, and then you come up out of the water. So straight away I crack up, you know, they're the reusable ones. You twist them and then they start warming up. So you need your hands to get back to working conditions again, like, you know. So
yeah,
I have them. So yeah, that's great. I think it's a fantastic VSP. Well done.
Very good. So a little hand warmers, we can pick them up in, like you said, €92 shop, 90 Irish stores, and not only for warming your hands, but for warming your lens. Cool. That sounds good to me. Darren, do you want to come in there in that VSP? Are you happy enough with that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting one, and it's something that, you know, I think a lot of people can get a benefit from, not only for the lens, but also, as we said earlier, standing around and keeping themselves warm too. I've heard of people put them in their shoes.
Your feet are one of the four things to get cold on the winter nights, I can tell you that. Obviously, warm clothes is one of the most important things you can have as well.
Very good. Well, guys, you know what? This has been a great discussion. I'm delighted you came on, Anthony. We really appreciate you taking out the time in your evening to come on and talk to us. And earlier on, we spoke about bringing somebody who hadn't really taken Star Trail photography photographs in Glendalough. So that's going to be me. I'm going to call up to you.
No problem. Give me a shout anytime you're up. In
these winter months, I'm going to call up to my mammy. Say hello to my mammy.
And I'm going to my mammy.
Yeah. And then I got a belt over to you. You might spend a few hours over in Glendalough. I'd love that.
Well, the old flask of tea and Star Trails.
Absolutely. And hand warmers. I'll bring hand warmers.
Hand warmers. Can I mention one more thing I forgot to say to you?
Of course you can.
There's a total lunar eclipse coming up in January. If anybody's interested, the moon's going to go blood red. I forgot to mention it earlier. It's a great shot to get. The last eclipse we had in July was completely clouded out. So this one's on January 24th, and on the same night, you've got planets Jupiter and Venus right beside each other, so which will be in the night sky as well. So three things you can get there in the same night.
Brilliant.
Super. That's and it. You know what, Anthony, if it's okay with you, we might put the list of events that we spoke about this evening on our Facebook page, so everybody can go back and mark them off in their calendars.
They're all in my own calendars, if anyone's interested. I make calendars for photographers, and basically they get for the astrophotographer in particular, as well as having nice pictures for normal people. They give you the moon phase for every day of the year. Every meteor shower, every eclipse, every event that's happened is all marked. Great for photographers to have, you know.
Super. Can contact you then through the Republic of Astronomy, I presume.
Or my website at anthonylynchphotography.com.
Excellent. That sounds like a plan. Okay, well, I want to say thank you very much, and I'll see you before the winter months are out. And guys, to Dermot and Darren. Thanks for joining us as well. As always, your input's been great.
All right, guys. Yeah, Anthony, thanks a million, man. Slánga fóill.
And thanks for having me, lads.
Yeah.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.